Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Hey guys, it's Nick Rigoretti's. This is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show, and we're on episode number 27. Got a really fun guest on. It's my buddy Andrew MacDonald. He is living in Thailand at the moment. He's been there for 7 years, and he's got some great stories about his experiences there. Before we get into the show, please remember to head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com and support us by picking out any of our awesome jiu-jitsu merchandise or instructional products. Remember, you can get 10% off anything in the store. Just use the coupon code PODCAST. And also, guys, if you're enjoying the show, it would really mean a lot to me if you'd head on over to iTunes and leave a good review. That makes the show more popular, which means I'm more likely to keep doing them. And everyone's a winner. So here we go, guys. Episode 27 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Enjoy. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I'm speaking to my friend Andrew MacDonald, who is in Bangkok, Thailand. Interesting thing about Andrew and I, the way we met. Andrew, remind me, please, but I think it was in Japan. I was training at a place called Carpe Diem, and you were the one other foreign dude in the academy, and we decided to have a role, and we became friends. Is that pretty much how it went down?
That's pretty much how it went down, yeah. I remember I was wearing a white belt, and I think at the time I was a brown belt, but I had left my belt back at the hotel, and you were doing a seminar there, and I remember when we first started rolling, you were telling me, you're not a white belt, are you?
Yeah, because you pulled that classic move, which is like, let me just roll up in a white belt, and then, you know, if anyone beats me, then I'm a white belt, doesn't matter, but if I beat them, then I feel like the Mac Daddy, right? That was your plan.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
It worked, bro. I had to call you out on that, though. I've seen too many dudes do that sandbagging shit. So, my man, you're originally from Canada, right?
Yep. Originally from Ottawa, Ontario. Finished college, and then I moved down to Toronto, and that's pretty much where my jiu-jitsu journey started.
Okay.
I was doing a lot of other martial arts, but jiu-jitsu was definitely started in Toronto. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And now you find yourself, I mean, I cannot think of anywhere geographically further away or more different from Toronto, Canada than Bangkok, Thailand.
For sure, yeah. I've been there 7 years now, and I could definitely say that the first 2 years, 2 to 3 years, it was a big adjustment. Man, the heat, the humidity, the culture is completely opposite than Canadian culture. Mm-hmm. And it's a crazy place, man. I mean, Canada's cold and conservative, and people don't talk to one another. In Thailand's, you know, the hustle and bustle of a big Asian city.
And what made you choose to make your home in Thailand?
I met a Thai girl in Toronto, actually. She was studying English there, and we got together, and she convinced me to move to Thailand.
That's cool. Is this the wife of yours that I've met? Is it the same Thai girl?
Same Thai girl. Okay, yeah.
She's a lovely lady, dude. Whenever I'm in Bangkok, your wife owns a massage studio, and it's one of the best ones, dude. It's just super high quality. So
thank you.
Shout out to that. I miss that place.
Yeah, it's my second home. You can imagine when you're doing jiu-jitsu, it's no better other business to have than a massage parlor.
You know, I never asked you that. I don't know why. I never got around to asking you that. But do you just go for a massage whenever you want?
When we first opened up the massage place, I was going in there every day.
Okay.
and now over the years, I'm down to 2 massages a week, I think.
Oh, it's just hot. It's a life's tough out there, huh?
Yeah, but it's a good feeder business. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people come to people traveling to Thailand. They come to the academy, mm-hmm. and they do jiu-jitsu, and then we beat them up, and then we send them to the massage parlor.
That's awesome. It's like what really pisses me off, dude, about, I don't know how it entered into the into Western culture, but whenever you say like, oh yeah, I'm going for a massage in Thailand, there's automatically the connotation that you're going to go get some sexual service provided, like a rub and tug joint or something like that. But I mean, sure, you can find that if you're looking for it in Thailand, but the average massage place is not that. It's just providing a quality service, like it's a real massage. And dude, I don't know about you, but I've done it all, dude. I've done the acupressure, I've done Swedish massage, I've done physiotherapy massage, sports massage, blah, fucking blah. And nothing to me comes as close to proper Thai massage for making my body feel good and helping alleviate the issues that jiu-jitsu creates.
Agreed. You know, man, if you can find the right masseuse in Thailand, like a regular lady to give you a massage or gentleman, mm-hmm. man, they really fix you up. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I would say that most, you know, about 30 to 40% of the places are clean places. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. legit massage parlors. There are a lot of happy ending massage parlors, but you know, you gotta kind of weed them out and find the ones.
And you've done a lot of weeding, haven't you?
A lot. It's funny, man. The first time I went back to Canada after opening up the massage parlor, I hadn't been back in maybe two or three years, and I remember I was going through customs in the Vancouver airport. Mm-hmm. Guy asked me, you know, what are you doing in Thailand so long? And what do you do for work there? And I said, I had a massage parlor. And the guy asked me, what kind of massage? And I said, a Thai massage parlor. And then as I went through the customs, I was waiting at the conveyor belt. I had customs officers come up to me and pull me aside and search everything and ask me the same questions again. So I guess owning a massage parlor, you know, it's notorious. Or
yeah. It's such a pity as well. Cause I mean, I'm not making judgments on anyone who wants to, like, I don't know, go get jerked off while he's having a massage. I mean, if that's your thing, that's your thing, dude. I mean, it's personally not my thing, but I just find it like, it's kind of sad that like when Thai massage, like proper Thai massage is such an amazing healing, form of physical therapy. And it's kind of, you have to overcome this hurdle to get anyone to even consider trying it, you know, which I find ridiculous. Cause I really do believe that, especially for jiu-jitsu guys, like I remember when I was in Thailand, or when I go to Thailand, I have a 2-hour massage every single day. You know, if I'm there for a month, that means I'll have 32-hour massages. Sometimes I'll have more than one a day because it's dirt cheap. It's like $15 or whatever, like with a tip, like. And it is the best physical therapy I can have. I mean, it's even better than doing yoga. It's almost the way I described it to someone is it's kind of like they are, you're getting an almost like an automatic yoga machine. Like they are doing the yoga for you. Like they'll bend your body and twist you and like do everything that you would do in yoga, but you don't have to put any effort in. You just like have it done to you, which I absolutely love.
Exactly. I mean, there's times where you walk away from it, man, and you're like, you're a little bit sore, like you've done a workout.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. Yeah.
Then the next day you're a man, you're like brand new, you're stretched out, you know, your muscles feel good, your joints feel good.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's absolutely amazing. So, Andrew, tell me I just want to preface the question I'm about to ask you by telling the listeners that I absolutely love Thailand. It's one of my very, very favorite places in the world. You know, I remember the first time I really spent time there was about 10, 12 years ago, just when I'd started to make a little bit of money through my jiu-jitsu career. And I left London on this vacation. I went to spend a month in Thailand. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, this is fucking it, bro. Like, it's relatively inexpensive. People are so relaxed. It's got amazing weather and climate. And there's a bunch of like people walking around just having fun. Like, and I thought to myself, like, fuck, I don't ever want to leave here. Obviously, like as time's gone on, like, and I've become slightly less naive, I've realized that there is, you know, a bit of a dark underbelly to it. And, I was just looking at it through the eyes of a dumb Western tourist. But I still think it is such a, I mean, I put in one of my Instagram posts a while ago, I was just leaving Thailand. I'd been there for 3 months, and I put a picture of one of the palaces, and I said, forget Disneyland. If you want to go to the real Magic Kingdom, go to Thailand. And I still believe that. It's this weird, mystical, magical adventure land for adults almost. Does that make sense?
Man, Thailand is one of the places on this planet that I've been to, that there's something mystical, like you said, there's something mystical about it and magical about it.
Uh-huh,
I mean, it's an old land, man. And I definitely, like, Bangkok's called the City of Angels, right?
Uh-huh.
I believe it, man. There's like, there's some energy there that you can't explain, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, here's a story, man. I never believed in ghosts before, right? Living in Canada, I was, you know, I'm an atheist. I science and math, okay. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And my wife's sister calls us up one day, and she says that she saw, or her kid saw, a ghost. And her kid keeps staring at the window, the patio window. And me and my wife are like, okay, whatever, you know, take a picture of the window.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes a picture of the window. And the next day we see the phone, and there's a guy standing outside the window, staring in 70s clothing, an old Thai guy. And there was no way that anybody could have got up to the veranda or the window and would have been staring in. And since that day, man, I believe in spirits. I believe in ghosts. I think there's an energy there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in Western culture too, we lose our ability to realize these things or see these things because we don't believe in it. You know what I mean?
It's, you know, I've heard someone say, I've heard it described as it's an ability that is cut off from you through belief. So if, for example, everyone in the Western world was taught from a young age that ghosts and fairies and supernatural things in alternate dimensions were unquestionably real, and they kept being told that all the way through to adulthood, they would probably still retain the ability to communicate or see these realms. But when you turn 7 or 8 and your mom and dad tells you, okay, there's no such thing as Santa Claus or fairy tales or whatever, and that then the scientific materialistic worldview starts to filter in, and you're taught that it's only what can be measured, and et cetera, et cetera. Then you kind of seal off that ability within yourself.
Exactly.
And that's kind of what you're referring to, right?
Sure, man. Thai people, you know, from the day they're born till the day they die, they believe in ghosts and spirits, and they pay,
uh-huh,
they pay respect to them, and they light incense for their dead ancestors every day and all kinds of stuff, man. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if the masses believe in it, then that energy will have an outlet. You know what I mean? An outlet.
To
express itself.
One of the ways, I mean, when you, I appreciate when you say that energy will, if the masses believe in it, that energy will have an outlet, but it could even be that if the masses believe in it, then the masses consciousness, the collective consciousness creates it. So,
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, ghosts might actually be much more prevalent, or spirits might be more prevalent in Thailand because people believe in them, and that actually creates them. Where if we're living in England or the US and everyone says, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit, then that opportunity for those things to develop might be cut off as well on a more macro scale. So I wanted to ask you, Andrew, living in Thailand, what has been you spoke about the culture shock, especially in the first 2 years. What has been biggest or the most difficult thing, or the thing that you can't get your head around, or that's made life just challenging when it comes to Thai culture versus Canadian culture?
I would say, you know, I guess one of the first things that people have a hard time with, and I did as well, was they don't stress out about stuff like we do in the West. You know, someone says they're going to meet you at 5 o'clock. It's okay to show up at 5:30. You know, Mai Pen Lai, they say in Thailand, right?
Okay. Okay. I heard once that I heard it said that, for example, Brazilians and Spanish style people or like Latin style people, the Westerners, we look at time as a continuum, right? So there's a point in the past and the point in the future, and you're moving along that continuum. And when I say to you, I'll see you at 3 o'clock, it's a very defined point in that continuum. It's like a, it's an etching on that line or on that spectrum. Whereas people of those different types of cultures, they look at time more as a cloud. So if I say I'll see you at 3 p.m., it's not 3 p.m. sharp. It's kind of like a general area that's floating around 3 p.m. Is it something kind of similar to that?
Very similar, man. Very similar.
Yeah, that's weird.
But it's nice, man. You know, Thai people don't stress out. They don't stress out like we do in the West. It's day to, you know, people live day by day.
That's cool. Now, do you think, having been there for 7 years, and you all relaxed and chilled out because you've been living in this alternate reality time and the adult Disneyland, do you think that you will be able to, if you ever decide to move back to a place like Toronto, would you be able to reintegrate?
I don't think so, man. I think, you know, the times that I've gone back to Canada, I spend sleeping on a couch dreaming to get back to Thailand. It's really hard to reintegrate. I think Thailand's one of those places that screws you up for the rest of your life, man.
Yeah. I hope my chick isn't listening to this, but... and my business partner as well, but I'm saying it with like, there's only like, there's a lot of jest to it, but for me it's always just been like, if they push me too hard, man, I'm just gonna go live in Thailand. Like if that's what it comes down to, I'm out, dude. Like, and Mark and Annie, I don't mean that, guys. I really don't mean that. So you are married to a Thai woman. That must be a trip.
Yeah, man. There's moments where my head spins around, but I think Thai women, you know, in Thai culture, the women are like the rocks of the family. You know, they take care of everything, man. I think it really translates well for a Westerner. I mean, my wife, man, is so supportive for everything I do. She's very understanding. But she's like the boss, you know what I mean? And she's dangerous too. My wife's pretty pretty dangerous, man.
I remember you saying to me, I'll never forget it. You said, "Man, if she ever loses love for me, I'm a dead man."
For sure, 100%.
That's great.
Everybody's scared of my wife, man. She runs the street that we live
yeah.
on.
Yeah. That's heavy. So, dude, this is the last thing I'd like to speak about with Ty, and then we can move on. But you've lived there for 7 years now, and I've always wanted to know, it's something that I couldn't really get the inside scoop on because I'm a foreigner, but how do you have any insight as to how the Thais look at us Westerners? Being married to a Thai woman, having been there for 7 years, I'm sure you've got some kind of, I've heard it said that they just look at us as walking, talking ATMs that they can get cash out of. And some of the, I've also heard people say that they look at Falang, which is the Thai word for foreigners, as really stupid and crass. What's the truth behind this? I'm very interested.
I think the Thai population is a lot smarter than we give them credit for in a lot of ways because they're so relaxed. And I think they see the difference between the different type of foreigners that go there. You know, I think they see, you know, the atypical drunk sex tourist stumbling around, you know, the red light district, you know, with $1,000 in his pocket. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, he's an easy target, and I think they see the foreigners that are there, you know, working or opening up businesses and you know, doing like a good thing there. I think they look at us a little bit different, and they appreciate it, and they kind of include you into society a little bit, but you know, it's an Asian culture. You're always an outsider to a certain extent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the more I live there, the more I realize that they're beautiful people and they just want to get by like everybody else.
Just like everyone else, man. Yeah, that's cool. So I said I wasn't going to say anything else about Thailand, but just one more thing. What is your craziest Thailand story? If I say that, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Because I know you've lived quite an intense life and I know you like to party. So I thought maybe you could share something with us and we could all live vicariously through you.
I've got so many stories from Thailand. Unfortunately, half of them I don't remember, but I guess I have to talk about my Japanese friends a little bit, man.
Okay, let's hear it.
Yeah. So when I moved to Thailand, the guys that I was hanging out with mostly at the beginning were Japanese, and they befriended me, and really beautiful people. You know, they're a little bit different too because they've been living in Thailand for so long, but they're crazy, man. These guys, you know, I've gone to karaoke joints with these guys, and I've seen them serve, you know, alcohol out of hot, you know, the karaoke girl's shoes. People, you know, I these guys will get up on a table and light their pubic hairs on fire, and they call it Dragon Balls, actually. You know, they stand up.
Amazing.
Light their pubic hairs on fire and twirl their dicks around. What else, man?
I guess there's a bunch of stuff, stories I've heard, like, indirectly about your exploits, but I'm not going to air them on here. It just must be such a wild thing. Would I be correct in saying that the kind of stuff you experience living there in Thailand and having made that decision to go there, it's just stuff that you would never, ever, ever live through if you had stayed in a place like Toronto.
For sure, man. For sure. I mean, you know, the list goes on. I mean, I've been on the back of a taxi cab holding on to the back window comes down to the hood of the car or the trunk of the car. But I remember being so smashed, I jumped on the back and held on, and the taxi driver knew I was there, and he just drove around the city for, you know, 15, 20 minutes to die. I mean, you know, or getting on the back of a motorcycle and the guy's, you know, smashed off Samsung, which is like a Thai whiskey, I guess. And, uh-huh. you know, holding on and praying for my life. I mean, you don't know until you go there and you experience these things, how nuts it is, man. Like,
yeah, I remember a story I'm fond of repeating. I think I might've even told it on the podcast before, but anyway, it's worth telling. A friend of mine, he was one of the co-founders of Sony Ericsson, which is, I think, doesn't exist anymore. It's been disbanded. I think it's just Sony now. And so a super high up executive, and he was, they were doing some business in Thailand. I think they were sourcing some components, and one of the executives beneath him, it was like his right hand man, still a very high ranking executive, you know, a powerful corporate person. It was his first trip to Thailand, and they arrived there and they spent a couple of weeks doing business there. And at the end of the trip, he said, look, I want to put in leave. I want to take some leave and spend some time in Thailand. And so my buddy, said, sure. And he never saw the dude again. Like, the guy sent him a message a couple of weeks later saying, like, I'm out. I just want to spend a year or two traveling Southeast Asia. And I don't think the guy ever made it back to Europe. He's just still there to this day. And I always thought that was kind of a cool story.
I believe it. There's people I meet there all the time, man, that have just, they've given up everything that they left behind. They don't care about it. They're happy. You know, they marry a local and that's it. They stay there the rest of their life and live the Thai lifestyle, man, which is day to day.
That's awesome. So Andrew, my man, this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show. So I gotta find out a bit about your Jiu-Jitsu journey. Man, you just got your black belt last year. Is that right? Or the year before?
2000, I think close to the end of 2016. Yeah.
Okay, so it's been a couple of years now, and you had a long journey to get that black belt, right? How long were you training before you received your black belt?
You know, it's a little bit foggy, but I seriously started training jiu-jitsu in 2003, 2004, really seriously. I was training. Okay. I did a little bit before that, but that's when I really got into it.
That's cool. And how did you get into it? I'm guessing you watched the UFC and you wanted to take it from there. Like, that's an interesting thing I'm finding is most people, when I say, how did you get into it? The story is kind of similar. It's they watched UFC 1, watched Royce dominate everyone with the armbar from closed guard. And they thought, that's cool. And I want to try that out. Like, what was your journey?
To be honest, that you know, I watched the UFCs when I was younger, but that wasn't actually the defining moment that made me want to get into jiu-jitsu. I was doing traditional Chinese martial arts for a long time. I don't want to say wasting my time with it, but you know, I was doing kung fu and you know, Wing Chun and Choi Lei Fat and all that kind of stuff. And then I got into Sanda, like Chinese kickboxing, and went off to China for a little bit. And I was in China and with a couple friends from Canada, and we started doing Sanda there. Went to Canada and we started teaching Sanda out of a Sambo school in Ottawa. And and then started doing a bit of Sambo, got introduced to it. A guy named Igor Yakimov, crazy Russian Sambo teacher. Man, started to really enjoy the grappling martial arts. And then I remember a friend going to a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu academy in Ottawa, and he said, "Man, you got to go there. You got to try this out." And I had done a couple no-gi tournaments before that, and I thought I was pretty good at grappling, man. Like, you know, I could do an arm bar. I could hold someone in a close guard for, you know, 5 minutes. I went to this Jiu-Jitsu academy, and I remember just getting my ass kicked so bad, you know, getting ragdolled. And I had never felt that before from any of these other martial arts that I had been doing. And from that moment on, man, I was like, I was hooked, man.
That's great. That's great. And so you carried on training there. And then how did you get it to the point? I think what a lot of the listeners will be interested in is most of the guys I speak to have their own academies, or many of them have their own academies, at least. Now, how did you come to that point? Was it just a logical progression that you were in Thailand living with your new wife and you wanted something to do? Or was it deeper than that?
When I moved to Thailand, you know, I was a little bit depressed as far as the jiu-jitsu was concerned. I mean, there was a couple of really good teachers in Thailand, you know, really talented individuals. I have a lot of respect for all of them. But the academy that I had come from in Toronto was a pretty relaxed academy. I mean, you know, we didn't follow a lot of the you know, the strict formalities of a martial arts academy, and it was more about the training and you know, putting in a lot of roles. And when I moved to Thailand, I couldn't really find that. So eventually, me and a couple of the Japanese guys, our Japanese friends, we started just renting a space out of a karate dojo, and then it just grew from there, man.
That's cool. And the name of your school is Arete, is that right?
Arete BJJ, yes.
Okay. And you chose that name because?
I used to read like a lot of the old Greek, you know, like the Odyssey and the Iliad. Mm-hmm. And arete is a word used in those, in ancient Greece. I could be wrong, but I think it means, you know, my interpretation of the word is to make everything in your life beautiful. If you're going to do something, you know, do it with beauty.
That's fucking awesome, dude. That is really cool. I'm kind of jealous that name's taken now. Now that I find out what it means. Good for you, dude. Yeah. Well, Andrew, my man, I thoroughly enjoyed you coming on the show. I'm going to have to make this one a little bit shorter than usual because I've got another podcast starting in a few minutes. I had to book them back to back today because the next guest, he could only make it at a specific time. But if people wanted to come and train with you when they're in Bangkok, and I highly recommend that you do so if you find yourself in Bangkok, because not only will you get some good jiu-jitsu, but as I said to you recently about your academy, you'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. you guys have a lot of fun out there. Every academy that I visit, there's a kind of a culture, right? And most of the time they're good cultures and they're cool people in there. They have fun, but you guys really take the having fun part to the next level. So if you are wanting to take a party vacation in Thailand and maybe do a bit of jiu-jitsu on the side, Arete is definitely the place. How would people find out more about it?
It's definitely a mixed bag of delinquents that train jiu-jitsu at Arete. But we have the website, which is, I think, www.arete.com. It's if you're in Bangkok, we're actually moving the academy pretty soon. I don't know if the address will do any good, but there's the Facebook page is Arete BJJ.
Okay.
Check on
cool.
there.
Well, Andrew, my brother, speaking to you has made me kind of homesick for Thailand, if I'm honest. As much as I'm enjoying being here in the States, Thailand will always hold a special place in my heart. So it's kind of tough having spoken to you about it. But thank you for sharing your story with us. That's very cool. And we're going to have you on the show again later in the year for sure.
Sounds good, Nick. Thank you for having me, man. And I hope you can make it out to Thailand this year.
For sure, my brother.
Yeah, thinking back on that, it must have sounded like a travel expo for Visit Thailand or something like that. And the truth is, sometimes the podcast is for you guys and sometimes it's for me. And this one was for me. I really wanted to feel a connection with Thailand again. And that's how I feel every time I speak to Andrew. I've got good memories of hanging out with him there in Thailand. It really is, as he and I said, a magical kingdom. I urge anyone who hasn't been there, even if it's a lifetime ambition of yours or if it's going to cost a lot of money and be a big trip, still make it happen. Go visit Thailand. It will change you forever. In fact, I had such a profound experience during my time in Thailand that I got the word gratitude tattooed on my arm in Thai. It was the first place and the first time in my life that I've truly was happy to be alive. And it was largely a state of mind because of the people that were around me and the way I was looking at the world, but it was also largely to do with the fact that it was that specific place and the opportunities and experiences that it presented. So please, if you ever get the chance to visit Thailand, go check it out and go train with Andrew. Cool, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a very powerful episode. It's Henry Akins, and he had some very cool stories to tell. I know you guys are going to enjoy that one. Until then, peace out.